That's Derek Carr speaking about his other receiver, Michael Crabtree. You know,
he's got a couple good ones, doesn't he?
When Jim Harbaugh said that Michael Crabtree had the best hands he'd ever seen, a lot of people laughed at him. But I don't know that that's too far of a stretch. He didn't say he was the best receiver he's ever seen. Michael Crabtree's got soft hands. That's going to be a pretty dynamite connection.
Best
I know you're
hand.
Looking at me like, hey, soft hands there.
So
as we pivot out of this and we continue to talk football, he usually joins us every Monday, but he was out busy training the next generation of Derek Carrs. Sean Salisbury joins us now on KHTK. Hey, Sean, it's Nate and Katie. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys today?
Excellent. It's great to have you on. You know, we were listening to that audio clip from Derek Carr, and we got plenty to talk about with the Raiders and all over the place. But, you know, Michael Crabtree is a guy, Sean, that I've been watching since forever. I'm a big Niners fan, but watched him there. You know, noticed the hands and stuff like that. But I think he's kind of an under-the-radar guy for the Raiders this year in terms of just a solid veteran receiver. And one of his favorite traits of mine is his blocking downfield.
Oh, there's no question about it. He is. I judge receivers and backs kind of the same way. Well, you know, a lot of people when they're judging them say, "Yeah, can he run?" Well, yeah, most good running backs can run in the hole, and as a wide receiver, you know, most guys when they're open should be able to catch a ball that hits them in the hands most of the time. That's why they're getting paid the money they get paid. But then when you look at both of those positions, and speaking of the receivers, great players out of the running game don't happen unless obviously people up front are blocking. But the big plays happen when a receiver blocks downfield. And I always compare great receivers. Say, if you want to be great, be Hines Ward. It's like a point guard who doesn't score 30. I think of Jason Kidd when I think of a receiver, like when you're talking about Crabtree, a guy who gets you 6 points, but also gets you 18 assists and 16 rebounds. And Hines Ward was like that. Hines Ward, one game may catch 12 balls, and the next game may only catch two, but he'd go block his butt off the entire game and wear people out. He took such great pride. And I spent time talking to him about that over his career and even after, that it meant a lot to him. And it means a lot. So big plays out of the running game happen. The same thing with the back. Can you protect on third down so we don't have to take you out and bring in the guy who obviously we're bringing in for pass protection? So I like three down backs, and I like receivers that make a difference in a game when they're not catching the ball. And if Michael Crabtree, who at Texas Tech caught a lot of balls, came out with high expectations, went through some difficult times, now, boom, is back on that where he's going to draw a lot of the single team because of Cooper. So he's got a chance. You know, Crabtree should be an 80 to 90 catch guy, in my opinion. Their passing game is going to be better. Their offensive line's better. He's going to get a lot of the single stuff and not a lot of the double team because of Cooper. It's a great chance for Michael to elevate his career as he started to do again and re-earn that respect that he had coming out. But I love a guy that blocks, and that's where you earn respect. You don't earn respect by catching a go route outside. Everybody knows that and playing outside. Can you go inside the hash marks and numbers and catch the ball? And are you willing to go knock a safety right in his jaw and block for the running back to get a big play? And that's the next level of great receivers, and Michael Crabtree can block.
Sean, in our last segment, Nate and I spent some time picking some breakout players for the Raiders, one on each side of the ball. I'm curious what yours would be in this situation.
Well, I'm looking, you know, for them with the depth we've talked about at running back is a running back to step up if somebody gets hurt. You take a look at what the Cowboys have done. They drafted a running back. You take a look at what the Titans have done. One of them isn't going to last most of the season. And for me, it's that position on the Raiders to take it up. And I know when you get a new offensive lineman and you add the depth running back, or you bring in a safety, or you bring in another player. For me, it's the whole position of running back, because you're going to need two or three of them. And I look at teams that where a guy gets hurt, and we saw with the quarterback position in Dallas, or when you're starting quarterback. But let's not we only downgrade running backs, or we don't give them the respect they deserve until it's third and one or a 4-minute drill, and we need them. So I always laugh at why we've de-emphasize the running back in the draft, and now next year with McCaffrey and all these guys coming out, and Leonard Fournette, we're starting to see, maybe they're on Todd Gurley, what he's done, and now what we think Ezekiel Elliott's going to do in Dallas. The depth at that position is so important, guys, because it's not just running to daylight, it's all the other things, catching the ball out of the backfield. So I don't ever count on a running back, honestly, to give me 16 games. That's the way I go in if I'm a general manager or coach. So that position itself, that's my thing. I'm looking for a breakout where it's to another level, not only the first guy, but if we have to split, I don't even care if it's by committee. The Seahawks are going to go through the same thing without Lynch So they're going to have to use two or three guys. So for me, it's the running back position itself for the Raiders to take it to another level. We could say on every team there's four or five positions that have to have breakout guys, but for me, it's that position in particular. Can that position get 30 touches, 28 to 30 touches a week? And if that's the case, the breakout position, I think we've seen some breakout, but I'm talking about the depth of the breakout for me is important for the Oakland Raiders. And I think that will elevate them and keep them in contention for the division. You know, with Jamaal Charles coming off his injury, we know Denver's got quarterback issues and they too have to have depth at running back. So it's going to be interesting, that position in the division. Melvin Gordon was awful for the Chargers last year. That's an interesting position, not only for the Raiders, but the entire division itself.
Well, and when you talk about the running back position for the Raiders, I'm curious, now we've gotten to see a couple games with DeAndre Washington and George Atkins in the third. So at that 3-4 spot in that position, do you feel that is basically that they're going to be able to contribute in the way that you think they should?
From what I've seen in the preseason from Atkinson and Washington, it looks like it.
Mm-hmm.
I always temper, you know, my whether it's good or bad when somebody's going off. Like I've been a huge Dak Prescott fan for 3 years, and he's validating what I thought of him, but I still, it's two preseason games. When you see guys, and we don't get to see the little intricacies that Del Rio and that they see on the sidelines or in practice on a regular basis in the film room. But for the naked eye, it looks to me like they're creating depth position for sure. I mean, so I do. I think they can. I think that they can create the depth. The key is the intensity of the game goes from, and it'll go up from week two now to week three in the preseason. And then when we start out week one of the regular season, they start rolling through games. Then you'll start to know because schemes get more complex. It's not, like I said, just running on third and three. It's pass protection on third and three. Those are the things that you'll start to see. You know, automatically when we see a quarterback drop back and get sacked, there's two things we think. Either he held the ball too long or the offensive line screwed up. We rarely say, well, wait a minute. Did blitz pick up, did the running back whiff on the on his chip on the defensive end, or did he miss the will linebacker? So it's the whole thing, and it's a building confidence factor for the coordinator in certain situations to call plays. But from the naked eye, and from a distance and from TV and watching highlights and on film, it looks to me like they're creating depth because these guys are getting touches. So, yeah, I think the Raiders have taken another step at that position, at least depth-wise for sure.
Sean Salisbury joins us on KHDK. What leads us to the big fellas that are going to be doing the work right in front of them. That offensive line, the Raiders have invested some money there in the offseason. How close is that unit to being one of the best in the league? I picked them as my breakout. I kind of cheated.
Yeah, you know what? The thing about it, and I was discussing this on my radio show 2 days ago, about the continuity of the offensive line. And my local show, ESPN here, they're trying to find that continuity for the Texans, for Brock Osweiler in this group. And when you hear people talk about, well, quarterback receivers trust, and that's fine and dandy, but as a former quarterback, I'll be quite honest with you, the continuity that's the most important for any group on the entire field, not the secondary, it's not linebackers, it's not the front, the down three or four, depending on what kind of scheme you play on defense. It's those five guys up front. Now, that's the group that you're hoping can give you 14 to 16 games together. That's it. When you invest money, it's not so much you go out and get great play. That's one thing. But, man, that left tackle has to understand what the left guard does when the defense is playing games and doing twists and A-gap blitz and who's going to, you know, hit with their inside arm and who's going to push all those things. Keep an eye on the continuity, not just one guy or, man, how's the center doing, or when right guard, or when we bring somebody over in free agency, or we draft a guy. Keep an eye on the continuity. The best offensive lines in this league are the groups that are usually together. See, I'm one of those people say, would you rather have a big stud, superstar, Walter Jones, Joe Thomas left tackle, or five guys that maybe you didn't know much about but worked in unison as a group better? I'll take the five. Now, if you're fortunate enough to be the Dallas Cowboys, you've got three Pro Bowlers and one on the brink, and then you're blessed. And if you're the Raiders, as you continue to grow, yes. But it's the continuity of keeping them together, that they're on the same page day in and day out, week in and week out. So keep an eye. Depth is important, no question. And when you have a guy who's a swing guy that can go from left guard to right guard, or go from left tackle to left guard, or right tackle to left tackle, versatility is important. But the continuity of those guys understanding the center making a call and the left guard being understanding what they're doing. Keep an eye on how long those, when the unit starts the season, how long they can go together. Because the best units that I've ever been around I was fortunate to be around a team in Minnesota when I was on a team with Gary Zimmerman and Randall McDaniel and Tim Irwin and Kirk Loudermilk. They were on the same guys every year. We lined up pretty much the same dudes every year. And that's why they were so good, two Hall of Famers on one side. But they knew what each other was doing. And that's more important, continuity and trust, believe me, than the quarterback to receiver. That'll come. That's, you know, curl's a curl. Throwing a 12-yard curl is the same thing. But the continuity of keeping those guys healthy and five guys working together will be as important as any unit in the league on every team this year.
Now, Sean, on the other side of the ball, Nate and I were actually both in agreeance here. We both picked Ben Heaney to kind of have a breakout year. They obviously have some confidence in him going into his second year, but also there's this thing against him where he might be exposed because of his lack of size. What do you see on the defensive side of the ball?
You know what? I think that what I love about his aggressiveness, and the guy that is their head coach is a guy who finesse is not going to be his favorite thing. And undersized guys, it just becomes, you better be technique. If you can apply this, remember when Terrell Davis was rushing for his 2,000 yards on the offensive side and having those five straight years? Name me the starting lineup or name me the guy. You probably can't go Tom Nalen, and you start to go around the offensive line. But guys, they were undersized on the offensive side, but they were great technique. When you had to cut off a guy to give him a lane to cut back, he did it. And it works on the same side on defense. Is the oldest and most overused but true statement in football is low man leverage wins. And being a little light in the ass or undersized is one thing. But I've played with and against a lot of guys on the defense. Zach Thomas at his position at linebacker was one. There's guys, now we're drafting guys that say, hey, that are 240-pound safeties, yet we have 225-pound outside linebackers, or we have the 260-pound, 255-pound defensive ends. Are they going to put their hand on the ground in a 4-3 or stand them up in a 3-4? So, and in the inside, some guys, you know, we like 330-pound nose tackles, but there's some guys that are undersized. For me, it's how active it had John Randall. When he was in Minnesota, he was not a big guy, but John Randall was active. He had a motor that went the entire time. That when you played 75 snaps against him, you didn't just play 70, or you didn't play 64 snaps. You had to play every one of them. Because on the 72nd one, he was still wearing your ass out. So to me, I think the worst week in football is combine week, because we put so much emphasis on that. Yes, you've got to have that athleticism and that size. But to me, it's low man wins, leverage, and technique. And if you got better technique, you can make up for a lot of size and a lot of speed if you're doing it right. And that'll be the key. But I think the Raiders' aggressiveness, and you can protect some of those things by schemes and by what other guys doing. And having the one big full-grown man on defense, there's going to be a lot of attention paid to him. So other guys, like I said, when you got a stud at receiver, the other two guys can be great receivers and get more looks. It's the same when you're playing against Khalil Mack, the rest of the guys should be able to elevate their play. Or when you're playing against J.J. Watt, the other guys better play well, because that guy's going to draw the double and triple team. So this is a group of guys that I think aggressiveness has a chance to get to. Like I said, I'm a big believer in them challenging for the division this year. I really am.
When you talk about it, as we'll shift to the other side of the bay here, the size as opposed to technique, low man wins. Every now and then you get the rare combination of a player that has all of those things. The Niners drafted a rather large fellow a couple of years ago by the name of Arik Armstead, who seems to be getting it together a little bit in camp. What have you heard about him, and is he primed for a breakout season?
You know what? I believe Arik is, if I'm right, is in the genes. I think his dad or relationship to Jesse Armstead, who I played against. But you know what? I think the San Francisco 49ers have so many holes, I think they're going to need 9 breakout positions. I do. And I don't mean that in a disrespect. It's just,
right.
Guys, I'll tell you what, I'd like to see a breakout position for me at the quarterback. I'd like to see if Kaepernick could have a breakout position again and reinvent himself. I'd like to see if somebody's in. Think about 2 years ago was the worst offseason a franchise has ever had. So if Armstead, yeah, he's poised for it. I've heard good things. I have not seen 1 ounce of him this preseason because I can't. I don't watch 16 games a week on the preseason or focus on all the players. But you know, obviously, knowing and reading about him and scouting reports, he's held in high regard. And with that team, he has a chance to elevate his play and do it. But you got to get a whole bunch of them. He could play out of his mind, but this group is lacking at so many positions. They had the worst offseason, like I said, 2 years ago, of any I can ever remember, from retirements, suspensions, and coaches leaving. So while the 49er history is there, my breakout person on that, it must be the quarterback. And it'd be nice if the guy that was a play away from a Super Bowl could reinvent himself and get healthy and get back out on the field and get his body right with his shoulder and do all that and play like we expected him to. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. I'll tell you who to keep an eye on over there, though, is Jeff Driscoll. Mm. If all of a sudden Gabbert struggles and Kaepernick's banged up, you tell me, if those guys aren't going to win for you, say I got a third guy who's kind of a Chip Kelly guy, wouldn't you, if you're going to win three games, wouldn't you do it with a guy that maybe you can build a future with? I think he's sneaky good and was a good player in college after he transferred from Florida. I think the 49ers have so many holes, it's going to be a long season for them. So they're going to need about 8 or 9 breakout players this year. And Armstead obviously will be one of them.
You know, on kind of a broader point with that, Sean, how long do you think they're going to be dealing with the fallout from that offseason? I mean, you still see it. In my opinion, they're going to be chasing the ghost of Jim Harbaugh for years until they get back to the Super Bowl. But there was so much more that went on there personnel-wise. I mean, how do you dig yourself out of that?
Well, and they also lost great veterans. You know, when Frank Gore left and went to Indy, Crabtree across the bay. And Harbaugh will be the biggest loss. Now, I'm a big Jim Harbaugh fan because he's tough and he does it his way. And whether you like him or not, I care about respect. And I think that's like having a quarterback that you drafted second, Chargers with Ryan Leaf, and it can set your franchise back. The Raiders with Jamarcus Russell. I mean, it'll set you back. With them, they lost great Pro Bowlers. They lost future Pro Bowlers. They lost leadership. They lost moxie. They lost toughness. They went from a team that made that the deepest division in football with those four teams too. Oh my gosh, the 49ers, we expect them to pick in the top 5 picks again this year unless they do something miracle. I think it's going to take a while, I do. And it's all going to start, what are they going to do? Is the quarterback going to elevate his play? Then can you start to find and get a guy, whether it's an Armstead or a big play guy. With the 49ers, we've always had a big play guy for them. Somebody's always reared his head. Where's that coming from this year? So to me, there's so many holes to fill. It's going to be interesting to see how they build it and where they're going to build it, inside out, outside in. But it's got to start. The quarterback has got to elevate his play. And the question is he on the roster? Is it one of the three guys that's going to be there? Is it somebody else? But truth of the matter is, if they're a top 3 or 4 team, or bottom 3 or 4 team, should I say, and they're a top 3 or 4 picks, you're going to be looking, or even if it's the first pick, at a Deshaun Watson. And a guy like that can change your franchise around overnight. So we'll see. I root for the 49ers as well, because when the 49ers and Raiders are both good, football's better. With so many holes to fill, it's going to take a while, I think, for that franchise to recover from the worst offseason I've ever seen 2 years ago.
Sean Salisbury joining us this morning. And, Sean, after that breakdown of the 49ers and all the issues there, 49er fans are going to have to enter into some therapy, some real therapy after everything you just said. But you can't argue with it. So my question for you, when you look at this team and all the issues they had and everything you just said, what would be a good season for them? What would they have to do to say, okay, they're making some progress and I might be wrong?
You know what? Yeah, a lot of people put wins and losses, which I understand that's how we judge quarterbacks and how we judge teams and coaches. But, something that tells me that when you see a game and all of a sudden they're down 3 touchdowns, they fight back and win one late in the fourth quarter. So if we see them, while we see the scheme and guys start to buy in, while they may not have the athletes to execute what they're getting done all the time, that we see flashes of it. And you start to see them move forward. You start to hear verbiage coming out of theirs, and the players are starting to talk, man, we love what Chip's doing. Or, man, this quarterback has elevated his play. Looks like some of the things the old 49ers are used to doing. When you start to hear that, see it. But I don't think you're getting that division alone, guys. There's 4 losses right off the bat, you'd think, when you talk about Arizona and Seattle, if we're just being realistic. Now, the Rams, heck, they're not exactly the best team on the planet either. They're going to struggle with young quarterback or with Case Keenum, and they're not very good. But they have a better roster than the 49ers now. So I don't know. If you get to 6 wins, you'd probably crawl 10 miles over broken glass. I just think it's going to be tough. And it's not to be – I'm not being a smart-ass for 49er fans, because I'd like to see them get better. I like Chip Kelly, the coach, not Chip Kelly, the front office guy, as that was well witnessed in Philadelphia. So – I think they can win some games. And Chip will have them where they'll shock somebody and beat somebody they're not supposed to win or not supposed to beat. But you can't lose games. If you see them consistently lose close games or in the fourth quarter, then you'll know they're a long ways away. If they're in games, losing by 3, losing by 5, winning by 6, winning by 3, then you'll know they're starting to make strides. So I won't judge them on wins and losses this year. I'll judge them on progress and they're in the game within the game. But I can't fathom that they're not picking in the first 3 or 4 picks next year, considering the division, the NFC's tough, and they don't even really know what their quarterback situation is, among other things. It's going to be a long one for Chip, but it's a great challenge.
Hosts the Prime Cut radio show on SB Nation Radio. You can find him on Twitter at Sean Unfiltered. Sean, always a pleasure. Can't wait to talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, take care. See, I'm always the good stuff out of Sean. He's always got strong opinions there. You know, when it comes to, I can't disagree with anything he says about the Niners. It always shakes me a little bit because I'm faced with the harsh reality of what this season's going to be for them. But, I mean, there's, you know, you bring up Eric Armstead as a breakout player. It's like, eh, well, they probably need about 22 breakout players to get to 500 this year. Not encouraging. What else is not encouraging is the way the Giants have been playing since the All-Star break. And it didn't change last night against the Dodgers. We're going to check in L.A. with Eric Steven of TrueBlueLA.com. Thanks to Sean Salisbury. It is 8:25. Time to visit your Twin Peaks girl for the coldest beer, great food, and all the sports you want to see. Giants, Dodgers, someone's going to talk us off a ledge in one direction or the other. Sports 1140 KHTK. Dodgers Radio Network. They're the marvelous Charlie Steiner on the call there. You know what they say about Charlie is that with his level of enthusiasm, you just can never tell how deep those balls are going. The Dodgers, I know.
Doesn't
you
really
can,
help you out there,
I know.
Does
you
it?
can throw a punch at me later on okay. for that one. Dodgers beat the Giants. They now lead by two games in the National League West. It wasn't pretty last night. The Dodgers are playing with a ton of confidence. Their offense is tearing the cover off the ball. And so to further depress us here in this Giants swoon, we check in now with Eric Steven, Dodgers beat writer for TrueBlueLA.com. Eric, what's happening, man? I'm Nate. This is Katie. Thanks for making the time this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, you know. Well,
I'm fine. He's a Giants fan.
I've gone from, hey, there's nothing to worry about. They still lead the division to, oh, my God, this team's garbage. They can't play defense and they can't pitch and they can't really do anything. Now, for a while there, Eric, the Giants were struggling and the Dodgers, they were slowly making up ground, but they just couldn't quite get over the top. Over the last week or so, especially Adrian Gonzalez has just caught fire. What is it that has clicked with them, or is it just a matter of things coming together at the right time?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's so weird. This, like you mentioned, this run by the Dodgers and the sort of swoon by the Giants was unexpected. I mean, they were down eight games at the worst spot and 6.5 at the All-Star break, and I certainly didn't see the comeback happening this fast, I guess, is what it put it. But, yeah, the offense, and like you mentioned, Adrian Gonzalez, with Adrian Gonzalez specifically, he's having a down year, like power wise. Although he's trying to make up for that in the last week or so, I guess. But in Pittsburgh, he took a couple days off where he wasn't in the starting lineup. He ended up playing both games as a reserve, but he was sort of working on his swing and trying to get it right. And pretty much since then, I think he's hitting over 350 since that time, and he's hitting a ton of doubles since then. And then I think the recently the power is starting to come back. He hit obviously three home runs Monday, but he hit two home runs last week too. So him combined with sort of a resurgent Justin Turner, and then, you know, Corey Seager in the middle of the lineup, and Yasmani Grandal as well. His shoulder's fully healthy after off-season surgery. He set a career high in home runs already. I think he's either tied or like one behind most home runs in baseball as a catcher. So those four have really been, and Howie Kendrick, I'm leaving out a guy here. Those guys are all like basically driving the offense, and they're scoring like 5.5 runs a game or something since the All-Star break or even more. And that's really sort of, pushing all the whatever pitching problems they've had, that's sort of sweeping all that under the rug because the offense has been so good.
Eric, it's a long season, and you expect teams to have slumps and to get through some things, and you mentioned some for the Dodgers, but one of the things I think that they've really had issues with has been the injuries, and I believe it's like the 27th person they put on the DL and missing Clayton Kershaw. I'm curious from your perspective, because you get to see these guys all the time, what has been the driving force behind the push that they've been able to make up to this point?
Well, I mean, we talked, I guess, in the offseason, you know, It's always weird. They sort of had this, their payroll is like $240 million. So I'm not trying to say they're this sort of, plucky underdog or something. But that said, given that payroll, the front office, I think, did a pretty good job of, assembling sort of depth. I mean, it's hard to do that, really, to have depth that's like, you know, they brought up a ton of guys from the minors and just sort of filled in when they can. But, I mean, I think at this point they're almost stretching too thin. Like yesterday they put Scott Kazmir and Brett Anderson on the DL. So Anderson was going to start Thursday in the series, and Kazmir was set for Saturday. So they're still in this, like, this weird, like, we don't really know the rotation for the weekend yet. Like, they're just still putting things together. Rich Hill starts tonight. They acquired him from the A's August 2nd. He hasn't pitched yet. He really hasn't pitched in a game since July 7th. He did pitch once on July 17th, but he left like five pitches in with a blister. So he really hasn't pitched in like 6 or 7 weeks effectively. So he's sort of a question mark, although I think they think he's going to be really good when he's on the mound, and that's going to start tonight. But it's just a matter of getting these guys back. Kershaw's probably, I don't know, 2 weeks away, maybe. And so that's what they're just trying to get by, basically, till like rosters expand in September and when Kershaw gets back and when Hill's healthy. And so that's what they really need, I think.
Eric Steven at TrueBlueLA.com joining us on KHTK. Last thing for you. What's been the biggest difference between Dave Roberts and Don Mattingly?
It's weird. Both have a really good reputation for being, you know, like players manager, running the clubhouse very well. I will say this. I think Roberts actually gets probably a little bit higher marks in the clubhouse in terms of, I know Andy McCullough of the LA Times had a pretty good profile of Roberts a couple weeks back. And I think one of the quotes I saw, I think, was Justin Turner said something, about Roberts is really good at nipping things in the bud immediately. Like if there's anything that comes up, he's kind of all over it and it doesn't let it like fester. Mattingly was more maybe let the players police it themselves type of a thing. But no, Roberts is super positive. Makes sure to like talk to every player on the roster like every day. And you think about that, that's really hard to do, just from a logistical standpoint. But he's always, I think you think you could run through a wall for that guy. I think just based on his sort of energy, you know, no matter what. Like I said, they've thrown so many like curveballs at him with all the, you know, players on the DL, and just think about like trying to say hello to everybody, especially if you have like 15 guys on the DL. You're not just saying hello to 25 guys; you're saying hello to, you know, 30 to 35 or more. So his day has got to be like a super long day just from that standpoint.
Game 2, Giants Dodgers coming your way tonight from LA. Eric Steven covers the Dodgers for TrueBlueLA.com, and you can find him on Twitter at TrueBlueLA. Eric, great stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime.
All right, take care. Well, it's interesting to
me.
Two teams headed in completely opposite directions.
Well, and for him to say that they've been so spread thin with injuries and they really don't know who's going to be on and available game by game, we're looking at it from the perspective of we're covering the A's and the Giants. They look like they're rolling in L.A., but they've had some struggles, too.
And that's kind of what scares me is that they're doing this with those injuries.
That, yep.
They have a narrative now. That's what gets scary.
Yeah.
This time of year, teams get momentum. They have a narrative to rally around.
And if
like,
you're
hey,
healthy during the playoffs, then,
exactly.
Oof,
I mean, you look around the locker room and you say, hey, we got guys going down, but we keep trucking. Keep on chopping wood. And those things kind of tend to snowball themselves. Well, scary if you're a Giants fan, but good if you're a fan of the Dodgers. I cannot believe that we're going to do this to finish up the show, but we're going to do a Tim Tebow update. I know it's gross, it's disgusting, but we're not. There's not going to be any lollipops involved, so stick around. Sports 1140 KHTK. Are you just trying to liquefy our girl in here or what? Did you ever see that show on Nickelodeon, The Secret World of Alex Mack?
No.
You know what I'm talking about, Matt? Someone out there has
Nickelodeon?
To.
Nickelodeon?
Anyway, she like...
Is that what you do with
was
your
like
time?
No, this was when I was in like third or fourth grade or something like that. And she was like a shapeshifter or something weird like that.
Okay.
But when she did like her little shapeshifting, she would turn into a little like puddle, like the T-1000 in Terminator 2.
Okay.
It was kind of like that when you would. Anyway,
song,
I feel like
yeah,
that's kind of what you are when this song
this
comes
song,
on.
This song, it does it for me.
That's my point.
Yeah.
thanks to Sean Salisbury and Eric Steven for joining us.
I know it's going to be hard for you, but we can do it. We can
no,
get
I know.
Through it.
We have to.
we have to.
I mean, I don't know that like we have to.
Well.
Because we're not going to turn this into a, is Tim Tebow good or should he be playing baseball or any of that type of stuff. We're not going to do like the ABC level, you know, basic Tim Tebow stuff. But there are things going on in the sense that, well, one of his former wide receivers had some words about him. We're going to start there. Former NFLer David Anderson. And if you're thinking, who is David Anderson? So are the rest of us. He spent 35 days as Tim Tebow's teammate in Denver, July of 2011. He was interviewed by Fox Sports Radio yesterday. He said, quote, his mechanics really throw you off as a receiver because you're not really sure when the ball is coming. If you're playing in the middle of the field, you need to know when the ball is coming, and you need to know quickly because there's a lot of traffic in there. He'd look like he was staring you down, which can't happen, and then he'd throw the ball late, which can't happen. He could not go quickly from 1 to 2 to 3, talking about receiving progressions there. Say whatever you want. He could go scramble and make plays. That's great, but that also throws you off as a receiver. Off-schedule plays can happen, but they can't consistently happen, and they'd consistently happen with Tebow, blibbity blue blah. And basically,
well,
he
I,
just ripped him a new
can
one.
Can I please just point out, because, yeah, everyone's like, okay, who's David Anderson? Mm-hmm. He's been in the league for a while since, well, he was in the league for from 2006 to 2011. The most receptions he had in a season was back in 2009 with the Houston Texans. He had 38.
So, you know, like this is the David Anderson we're talking about.
Exactly. And that was by far his high the year before he had 19. And it just, you know,
I'm a little torn on his assessment.
Sometimes
here.
You have to consider the source. I'm not saying he's wrong. But sometimes you have to consider the source.
Right. Exactly. And I'll tell you why I'm torn here. Because if anyone would know bad quarterbacking, here are some of the guys that David Anderson has played with in his six-year career. Rex Grossman, John Beck, Matt Schaub, TJ Yates, Jake Delhomme, Matt Leinart, Sage Rosenfels, and the elder card, David, all during his six-year career. So in one sense, you'd say, hey, this guy knows a little bit something about crappy quarterbacking. In the other sense, you might just say, all of those guys are terrible, and he really couldn't catch a ball from anyone.
Right.
So maybe you look in the mirror.
But here's the thing. When you say that he was – when Anderson is saying, oh, he's terrible, and you look at the list of quarterbacks he
played
with –
Like, you were also objectively terrible, David.
Yeah, but take that – let's take the other side, the flip side real fast. Yeah, I'm not saying he was by any means a great wide receiver in the NFL.
Hey, he could have been if he had better quarterbacks. Come on. This is David Anderson.
There you look at it, though. Look at the list of quarterbacks that we just named off and then say he thinks that Tim Tebow is the worst.
I mean, clearly great receivers don't make great quarterbacks. No. We learned that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. You could be throwing to four David Andersons, Katie. But if you can't, you know, if you're Sage Rosenfels, you still stink, right? I mean, this guy, like, is there anyone that's sadder than David Anderson just in the sense that this
Why
dude
is he
was
saying
a,
this
well,
anyway?
No, because this guy obviously was a Hall of Famer waiting to happen and just
Jeez,
caught
mate.
The crap end of the quarterback roulette wheel over and over and over again.
That's what it is.
I think.
It could be.
Trying to stand in front of Dave here a little bit.
It could be.
I mean, come on.
I can't figure out if you're being, like, 100% right now.
No, I was not. No, I was not.
Or just being sarcastic.
Completely.
Okay,
just dripping.
Just checking. That's what I was going with.
My sarcasm is like you when you hear Black Velvet. It's just dripping. So all that being said, Tim Tebow may have zero NFL talent if you trust the legendary scout David Anderson.
Well, what about
but it doesn't,
baseball, maybe?
Exactly. It's not going to keep him from getting people to come watch his baseball tryout. Coming up August 30th in Los Angeles, our boy Timbo is going to have himself a little bit of a workout. He's going to hold a showcase showing off his baseball goods. It's been
What are his baseball goods, by the way?
Oh, he looks great in those pants.
What position is he trying to play?
It's a good question.
Like, I don't know.
Catcher?
But he's, you know what? He's going to show them off, whatever they are.
It's been reported that 20 major league teams are sending personnel to watch that workout. What's the best case scenario that happens here for Tim Tebow?
Well,
his baseball career. I mean, he's got eyes on him.
If I remember, yeah, he's got eyes on him, and it's because of his name. It has nothing to do with any kind of past history or success playing baseball. I mean, what, he played high school?
Yeah.
Congratulations. So did about 50,000 other people.
And but, you're probably selling that a couple zeros short.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, exactly. It's just an astronomical number. I'm as well being sarcastic, just really bad at math. The reality of the situation, because he's Tim Tebow, he has these opportunities. And it's kind of ridiculous because I read when this all started back a couple weeks ago or whenever it was, these days run together for me. It was reported that he's like, look, I don't want to be a sideshow in the minors where someone just takes me to sell tickets. Well, do you want to play or do you not want to play? Because you're Tim Tebow, do you feel that you are entitled enough to step right into the majors? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, just like, I don't know, man. Signs of the apocalypse, Katie.
He could, you know what? He could be a great baseball player. We just don't know. Maybe we'll know more on August 30th, and maybe we'll be able to put this to bed and never talk about it again.
And just all I'm saying is that in the next 6 months or so, be ready for our world to be swallowed up into a black hole. Because number one, like, regardless of which side you stand on it, like, the world's going to end after the presidential election. I think we can all agree on that. You've also got the Raiders with a potentially elite quarterback. And finally, Tim Tebow's going to earn a paycheck somewhere for playing baseball.
I think
that's what this world has come to.
I think he's going to make more money continuing on the, you know, speaking circuit. I really do.
Oh, probably. No, all I'm saying is that there are 20 teams there to watch him. Someone's going to give him a check to be that minor league sideshow. Whether they tell him that or not,
yeah,
and whether he accepts it, I'm just saying, like, after when all of this started, the world's coming to an end because Tim Tebow is going to get paid to play baseball in some way, shape, or form. And it is because strictly of his name. But, you know, what a wild.
What a wild.
A. Peter King. Join Sports 1140 for a free barbecue this Friday, 12 to 1 p.m. at the KHDK Studios, 5244 Madison Avenue. Enjoy free food, courtesy of the Barbecue Pro. You also have a chance to win a pair of tickets to an Oakland Raider game. It's
Raiders.
The one this weekend. Be here for that.
Raiders.
More info, visit khtk.com. 8:57, time to book your fantasy football draft party in the Twin Peaks Man Cave. That does it for us. We're going to be back tomorrow. A's baseball is not going to be covered on KHTK tonight. I guess Grant's back, and we want him in all his glory, right? Grant, this afternoon.
Absolutely.
Zippity-doo-dah. It's all happening. Thanks to Katie, and thanks to Sean Salisbury and Eric Steven. Matt George across the glass, our producer, Kevin Sheritz. Jim Rome is next. This is The Drive. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Call in right now for Sac Republic tickets, 339-1140. You can win a pair of tickets to see the Republic FC at Bonnie Field this Saturday at 8 p.m. Purchase your tickets at sacrepublic.com. We are out!